Hey, how's it going? I'm Nick, the host of the Echo Academy podcast, a podcast where we tap into the world's collective wisdom and experience to learn how we can be more resilient. On this episode, I speak with the head of people and culture at Open Government Products at GovTech, Rahul Daswani. If you live in Singapore, you might be aware of the various technologies deployed in our fight against COVID-19, most notably Trace Together, Save Entry, and those WhatsApp notifications. But what was that process like to be called upon to build tech to try and solve these problems? And more importantly, what was it like with time and resource constraints? Well, if you're interested to find out, Rahul shares that experience with us. So here's my conversation with Rahul Daswani. Before getting into the meat of the conversation today, like, how did you, you know, get into OpenGov, and what is your background?
So how I ended up here is I don't know, some fortuitous combination of the will of the universe and timing and a bunch of things. So my background is, started my career at McKinsey doing strategy consulting work after getting a degree in mechanical engineering and realizing I loved analytical problem solving. I just didn't care that much about cars. And so McKinsey was a good ground to figure out kind of what I might be passionate about in terms of industry at least. So I like the problem solving work. I ended up doing my second year at McKinsey exclusively on public sector work. So that's like, okay, great. I really like public sector work. Let me see if I'm cut out to actually be a public servant. Went to Papua New Guinea for a year and a half on this economy, built the Office of Climate Change for Papua New Guinea. And that's where I realized, yes, I like public sector work, but also I really like this idea of sustainable organizations and building capabilities and making sure people are capable, both with the hard skills and the soft skills, to be able to sustain an organization, because me or anyone else are not going to be around forever. So can I help build sustainable organizations? And then it kind of went from there. So I went and did my master's at Harvard in public policy because I know academic background. Spent some time in Ethiopia working for the government, also writing my master's thesis on the same topic. How do you increase capability building across an organization that is focused on a particular area that needs both hard skills and soft skills? Then decided to move home and kind of get my personal life in order, get married and so on. And then when joining the government, I thought, nice to at least first have an overview of what's happening. And I joined the Center for Strategic Futures, a bit more consultant-ish strategy role. And then I did another stint at Ministry of Home Affairs to get a feel for like hard domestic security concerns, policies. And then you combine that strategic stuff with actually resources and implementation, which is quite nice. But overall, I think after spending 5 years in government before I joined OGP, I think there's a huge focus on KPIs in Singapore. Like, hey, here's a KPI, let's make sure we deliver. Let's make sure we present to a lot of the high power people, whether it's politicians or bureaucrats. And there isn't a concrete, detailed focus on people. And as a consequence, both from a lot of the people that I spoke to and my own personal experience, there then came this widespread gap between the kind of potential that people have if you speak to them on a regular basis and the level that they're performing at on a regular basis. And that was just sad for me because, you know, there's so much more. I know Singapore was vaunted for having such a good government and so on, but there's so much more we could be doing if people were fulfilled and on that path of development and were comfortable, right? That yes, my employer is also taking care of my development as well. There's so much more you can do. And so I felt discouraged that wasn't a case in a lot of agencies, and after I spoke to a lot of friends. So I was actually going to leave government because I wasn't convinced that it was being taken seriously enough, and I couldn't be an organization that didn't value this, because then my own path became, do I build sustainably or do I gear for my own goals or my own promotions, which would be then based on KPIs. And I didn't want these to be diverging paths. And then I got a call fortuitously from OGP to say, hey, you know, we're actually facing an existential problem where if our people, and especially in the tech industry where talent is quite scarce, our people don't feel like they're valued and they're leaving. So we need to redesign people from scratch, and we've been designated an experimental unit, and actually we have freedom to reimagine what government would be like if you adopted, let's say, modern tech company practices or whatever practices make sense in order to have talent, that good talent that's going to stay and that's going to grow. So Rahul, do you want to come in and figure out what this looks like and build it with the clear intent that whatever learnings that emerge from this experiment ought to be mainstream where possible to the wider civil service? So I was like, wow, this is, if you ask me to dream up a job, I couldn't have come up with a better one than this one. So I said, yeah, I think I'll take this up.
That's so interesting. I mean, well, number one, I would have never expected a project like that to unfold within the government service. And perhaps I'm just a skeptic or pessimist, which might be unfair. But having said that, it almost seems like you came in for a consultant job first, you know, like it seems like you were there to solve a problem more than to be, you know, part of like human resources, so to speak. Was that fair? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. But the problem I'm solving is a human capital one. Is, you know, that's the problem that I'm here to solve. And I think what really helped for me is the clarity that I'm not just solving the specific problem for OGP, but there was alignment from the get-go that the idea is experiment not just for experiment's sake, but really for implementation and for wider use where necessary. And the key idea is not that I'm building the gold standard or the perfect system, but I'm building a system. But if you understand the philosophy and the principles that we think about and we document quite extensively, then you can adapt the particular operationalizing of how we've done it to suit the context of really any organization. And that's the big idea here. And so because my philosophy and was aligned with OGP's approach, which is, hey, we're experimenting for the purpose of implementation, then how you do it, how you experiment, and how you document, and then how you evangelize, and we're just reaching the evangelizing stage now, really makes a big difference. And then it becomes a long-term thing rather than a kind of consulting, more quick, let's solve this particular problem. And that's the difference.
Right. Well, so has any of your best practices been adopted by any other agency so far?
No, I don't think I should say who we're in discussions with right now.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
But the short answer is, yeah, there is quite some interest from government. We've spoken to PSD, which is the Public Service Division, which is government's HR, a few times now, and they're quite impressed with the robustness of the methodologies that we're coming in, that we've come out with. We've taken apart hiring and performance management already, and we've recreated them. We're going to do learning and development. That's the next kind of big thing that we're working on right now and then experimenting on that. I think the concern is just, how do you scale this, right? Because, I mean, it's 150,000 people. Each division is different. You have people that have to administer these things in particular ways for them to be effective. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to the relationships, right? People got to trust that the organization is just made up of a bunch of individuals. So if you trust that the other individuals actually care about you fundamentally, and that's something that you can't really teach, right? You can't really put in a framework. So, yes, you need something that's solid, that's set up, but you also need people to embody the values that make sense for this system to actually work quite well. So I think there's concerns about how do we scale this. And so the next logical step is the one you alluded to, which is, can we find other pockets in government that can try this out in their own way, shape or form, and say, hey, actually, this is useful. And then we get a set of different practices and different expertise in government, and then we can start thinking about scale from there. So that's kind of the approach that we're going for.
Yeah, well, that's really exciting. What now that I think this is a perfect segue, because when we talk about scale and government, I think it's a good segue to talking really about COVID and how, you know, OpenGov really played a pivotal role, I would say, in how everything came about, and especially in terms of tech. So, you know, when it came to COVID, you know, how did GovTech, or OGP rather, realize it was going to play an integral role in, you know, Singapore's fight against COVID.
Yeah, so the timing was in a way fortuitous because every January we actually run a hackathon. And the idea behind OGP is, and there are other parts of GovTech that are really good development teams as well, and they do things that are in part more top-down directed. So if somebody at leadership says, hey, here's clear direction, and for people who thrive under clear direction, it's actually a great place to work. And part of Govern Digital Services, which are our sister team, works like this. So that's actually great to do stuff top-down. For us, we do stuff bottom-up. And so the idea behind OGP is you figure out what the problem statements are, and by you, I mean each of the employees. And that's why we have a full month for hackathon. It's a bit structured. So you think about problem statements, you speak to public officers, citizens, whoever the stakeholders that make sense are, and figure out what problems exist. And then if there are legitimate problems, there's enough pain and there's enough benefit that can be accrued, then you start building prototypes. And then if the prototypes make sense, then you continue building. That's the idea behind hackathon. And a lot of our mainstream products have also come out of that. So what happened this January, I mean, we started to hear news of COVID, right? And a couple of products that we built were actually starting hackathon and they ended up pivoting to become COVID products. So specific examples, Postman is a product that we built and originally conceived as, hey, there isn't a way for public servants to send messages to lots of people, right? So by email, you want to send to other public servants, if you want to send to citizens, there isn't a clean, easy way for you to do that, whether it's by email or by SMS or whatever form. So let's build a platform that allows you to do that. And then we realized actually quite quickly that, hey, with COVID, there's a lot of fake news flying around. There's a need for government to connect directly with citizens. And so that team pivoted quite quickly to say, hey, what's the most common messaging app used by people in Singapore? WhatsApp. So why don't we build it for WhatsApp? And it's challenging because WhatsApp is not a tool that was designed for broadcast like Telegram is. But that's the tool that you want to use. You want to have people download a new thing and be trying to figure out how it's used and be a bit skeptical. So the Postman team pivoted and said, hey, how can we make this work for WhatsApp and build that for WhatsApp? Similarly, there was a team that was building PaySG, which is, there are actually still some government departments, not many, but some that still accept only check payments, for example, you know, check or cash payments. And in this era of digital payments, we want to make it as easy as possible for people to make payments. So that's the solution that was being developed and is still being developed now. But in between, we realized there's a greater need also for, you know, the redemptions of masks, right? And so the team, a different team, so built Redeem SG, which was used in the third distribution of MTI's mass distribution and Temasek's mass distribution, right? Like 3 million plus masks were distributed through that. And so building an app where it's actually easy to track inventory, has that gone out and has somebody actually taken the mask? So you don't have duplication that's going on. So it's actually things that made sense, that we had something in mind, but we realized actually the use case is not quite, doesn't quite make sense for a COVID period. So let's figure out how to have that flexibility. And I think there's two other things that I'll mention here. I think the first is, in order to do this well and be nimble, right, and switch to doing this, you have to have the courage, not just the courage, but of course the permission to also deprioritize things that you're working on. Because if you still have to maintain everything that you're doing and continue your work plan as is, you're not going to be able to find the resources, whether it's time or money, to be able to invest in doing something new. So you have to have the courage and the permission to be able to step away from some of our products that we were building. So for example, we also built Isomer, which is a website template generator. So anybody with no real coding background can actually put up a website quite quickly, which is obviously very useful even in this time. But rather than developing that further and creating more features on that, we said, hey, let's put that on hold. And that team actually went on to do Homer, which is a tool that allows people to self-report their location if you're on quarantine or stay at home notice, so that you report it and then you can focus enforcement therefore on people who are either not replying or people who have replied, but they are in a different location, like, hey, what's going on here, right? So that's obviously a tool that makes more sense now. So we put Isomer on hold and build Homer instead. So you have to have the courage and you have to be able to explain to people what's going on and still communicate with them and let them know when you might pick that up. And now we are reverting back to working on some of these products. But you need to have the flexibility to be able to do that. The last thing I'll say is, I think there needs to be creativity in terms of new ways of working. And we've done many things, and I can talk about them later in the broader theme. But one thing in particular that really helped in this fight against COVID was, actually, you asked how do we know when did we start thing, right? And it's when we started receiving a deluge of emails from people, many people in the Valley, by the way, Singaporeans or overseas, said, hey, can I help in this fight against COVID? All I have are my software engineering skills, but can I use them in some way to help, right? And we got 600 plus people emailing GovTech to say, hey, can I help? And you know, we don't work with volunteers, right? I mean, not in a sustained way, and not with so many volunteers. So the question became, hey, there's a lot of expertise actually that we should tap on, not really qualified people, but how best do we integrate them in the things that we're doing now? And so it requires also changing the way you work and who you work with in a way that allows you to then come up with really, really good products.
Wow, that's so interesting. And I want to focus on that 600 plus people from the Valley or perhaps all across the world who were willing to devote their time and energy and skill sets to this mission. How do you then utilize their skill sets? And how do you know, like, how many do you need, and how do you make them feel like, you know, they're part of this? Because I imagine that's a lot of logistics and admin to think about as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for these 600 plus people, you're right, they were all across the world, and also of varying skill sets, right? You have people ranging from senior engineers to students, right? So so we need to do a quick assessment of where these people fit, right? That's one. So on the supply side, you're going to call it that. Like, hey, where are these people at in terms of skills and commitment, right? These are the two main things. Where your skill level at, where's your commitment at? And how much you want to contribute. And then on the demand side, we also agreed that, so we work with the whole of GovTech, with Smart Nation Digital Government Office, to say, hey, where do we need people? Right? And so this is ranging from GDS, which builds safe entry and trace together, and our team and other teams as well, the sensors team and all, to say, hey, these are the projects that I'm working on, but also these are the skills that I'm looking for. Right? And then we have how do you work together and collaborate? Because like you said, it's massive effort. Actually, you know, in this day and age, a wonderful thing about using things like Google Suite, everybody has access to, you know, Google Sheet, and you don't have to have really sophisticated things at the start. But at least for volunteer management, we end up using Google Sheet. And what you do is track, say, hey, who's engaging this person, right? And you try not to have one person on two products, because it might be a bit much. So as far as possible, you're like, hey, which product is this person on? And then you pick, as soon as you're going to contact them, you say, hey, I'm going to ping this person for this product. And then you make sure that's updated regularly. So like Russell, my colleague, would every day basically update, make sure that she's updated, have a call, like 15 minutes call with people, say, hey, she's updated, are we good? This is the current state of affairs. And I think the other thing that's key is to allow people to engage in different ways. Right, so some people are like, hey, I'm committed, like my internship got canceled, I got a lot of free time, right? So I'm happy to spend my whole summer. So then you can involve people like that directly on product teams, and you can start putting them in your Slack group, for example. Right? So there you have to manage the time zone difference for people who are overseas and figure out if they can come for meetings or what makes sense. But aside from that, you can plug into the Slack group. Actually, you're already part of most of the communications, right? So that's the first time. The second type is people who are quite senior, can't have that much time, but it might be useful to think about architectural decisions, how we should think about a product and design it, what makes sense, some of the key decisions. So at what point should we engage them and on what topic? So there's some prep by the team, but it's really helpful because that can reduce a lot of the work downstream. You don't have to do a lot of work if you design a product pretty well upfront. And finally, the third is, frankly, a lot of people, because ultimately, you know, we're not huge. As an organization, we're only 3,000 plus people, and OGP is only less than 50 people. So it doesn't make sense to engage a ton of volunteers, right? So what we did is that, so we ended up engaging about 10% of them, right? About 40 volunteers, full-time-ish on products, full-time or consultant on products. But there's only people who want to help. And so what we did is we ran an idea sprint, which is basically like a hackathon, but over a couple of weeks, which gave people the time and space to be able to create something, create a prototype. And what we said is, and so 370 people participated in this because people are just keen to build something, which is a lot, right? And you have like 70 teams that came up and built prototypes. And what we said is the 12 teams that we think are, you know, most sort of useful, you get a chance to present your ideas and your prototypes to senior management. So they got a chance with Mr. Vivian Balakrishnan, with SMS Jana, with PS Chicken of the Smart Nation Development Office, the CEO of GovTech was there. And so we had a 2-hour plus webinar where each of these teams had allocated 10 minutes to present some time for Q&A. And then we figured out what was the integration between some solutions they had provided and some of the solutions that already existed, whether it's Sync Actuators together or whatever, and then linked up those teams to be able to contribute at least their code, if not a longer-term working arrangement with them. So it's quite nice. You know, it's different. You have to figure out different ways because there isn't a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. I'm really impressed by, number one, the willingness of Singaporeans around the world willing to help in trying to figure out the best solution for us. But number two, to organize people's creativity and energy towards a worthy cause. So, you know, that for me is fantastic. What I suppose is my next question would be, you know, we have people's creativity. You've given them permission to and the time and to some extent the resources to try and put something together. What's the process of building something effective in such a short period of time?
Yeah, so building something in a short period of time, not easy lah. But basically, I can say that there are many sleepless nights that were had over time. So first, I'm going to emphasize it. I think deprioritization is particularly important. I think a lot of organizations focus often on priorities, and the issue with that is you end up having with a lot of priorities. And with a lot of priorities, it's actually quite difficult to deliver. So I think there needs to be real clarity in terms of prioritization. And the way you get there is by deprioritizing a lot of stuff. Okay, and you have to be bold in your deprioritization. That's the only way you can do well and build something quickly, right? So that's the first thing. I think the second thing is it has to be an iterative process. I think sometimes we feel like we don't want to show the product, and it can be any product, right? It can be a tech product, it can be a work product. We want to refine it, and we want to have the best version of it, and they want to say, ta-da, here it is. Like, don't you think it's great? But the reality is, it's hard to even define sometimes what people want. And it's kind of this like, oh, I'll know it when I see it. But you need to show people stuff and they need to play around with it to say, actually, this is not solving the problem that I thought I wanted to solve, or this is not solving it the way that works for me. So you need to just build and iterate quite quickly. And so you need to be able to withstand, and maybe as engineers, people are more used to the idea that, you know, 80-90% of the code that you write somehow will be thrown away. But for a lot of us who are not engineers, I think to get used to that is a new way of working and a new way of thinking, right? The designs, the stuff that you do, you're going to chuck a lot of it. And so once you realize that this is the case, once you accept that this is the way, then you will realize, okay, then I better start showing work earlier. Right, because I'm going to throw away, I better throw away earlier and restart, and then I work on it some more and then find out that it's abortive work. Right? So I think work iteratively is the key, and a lot of the demos and the mock-ups were actually quite basic, quite simple. It's not the kind of sophisticated products you would see on like postman.gov.sg or homer.gov.sg. Wow, looks so nice now. But the first iterations and all were just like functional. Like, does this work? You see two dots. This is the distance. Does this distance make sense? Should somebody be accepted as near enough or far enough? You know, stuff like that. So as long as it's functional, that's good enough, and you want to see that it works and that it's doing the job. So I think that's the second point. Do it iteratively, and then focus on polishing the product at a much, much later stage. And then I think there needs to be a big focus on the user itself. So, and I think a lot of people say this, but in practice, it's not easy to do, because the user themselves, you need to go back to them, right? So you need to figure out, first of all, how to manage their expectations, their timelines, how to work with them in a way that makes sense. And sometimes you might have a view as somebody who's building the product, and again, can be tech or non-tech product, of what it should look like. But ultimately, if the user, for example, is the Ministry of Health, and they have certain things that they're looking out for, and they have a certain protocol that they follow, if you present something that doesn't fit, regardless of how great you think it is and how much you think you solve the problems, and they don't use it, it goes to waste. So it's really about asking the right questions, getting to the bottom of it, and not just asking, but really observing how people are using it to improve then the user experience, the design of it, the interface of it, in a way that is intuitive and integrates quite well into the process. So that is also an iterative process itself. Usually you have a discussion up front, but in each iteration of the product and the prototype, you want to have an observation and a discussion with people who are really, really using it to make sure that it works. And then that allows you then to quite quickly iterate and get something off the ground quite quickly.
Right. So does that mean success looks more like creating a product that is just good enough for it to be useful for someone, you know, especially during a time like this where speed is of the essence? So is it just a case of let's try to build something as simple as possible and as useful as possible, you know, without worrying too much about the bells and whistles?
So I think you have to start there, yes. So I think that is the fastest and best route to your largest success of a product that is recognizable and easy to use for everyone, right? Because ultimately you do need to get there, because if people citizens can't use your product, then also cannot, right? But the way to get there in the fastest and more robust way is what you described, is first getting what is commonly called a minimal viable product, MVP, and then after that you start incrementally increasing and tweaking from there, and then you will get much more quickly to something that is useful both for the agency and for citizens.
Right. I think that's one of the things I really appreciated as well. And I mean, something as simple as getting a WhatsApp message with the just before the end of the night, with all the details that you need to know, I think it's the most effective yet the simplest thing one can do, you know. And I think that was one thing that I appreciated, because before that, you know, in my mind, I was assuming, you know, especially those who are from engineering and in the tech world, you know, building something beautiful, you know, especially when you're trying to scale it is important. But you know, even the simplest products work as well. I want to turn and focus more on the employees within OpenGov and maybe GovTech in general, right? You know, you guys do a lot in the fight against COVID. Perhaps, you know, it'll be interesting to know how, you know, the company or the organization as a whole thinks about, you know, the employee wellness, especially once everyone was started working from home. And, you know, even though there's still communication, there's a lot, I would think a lot more isolation. So how did you guys think about taking care of the team?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, mental wellness is this like really broad, this broad concept, and there's a lot of elements to that, right? And I'll just focus on a few. So I think one big thing about mental wellness and people's concern, if you talk about the big transition, right? Like even I have now worked more at home than I have in the office, and I never imagined that, because I joined last September. Yeah. And from Feb, we started working from home, which means like I've spent more time at home than in New York, which is radical. But and how do you transition? So if you think about that transition, which is a big transition that was unanticipated, what is the consequence on mental wellness? So what are some of the issues that might arise, right? So one is, if you think about the differences between office and home, there is communication, right? It's a huge one, because you used to pick up all this ambient information that about what's going on in the office, like what, and if something will happen, somebody will say something, right? But you don't have that anymore, right? So people are living in this constant state of, hey, is something going on? I just don't know about it.
Right.
Right? And so how do you alleviate that tension? That is a new tension because it doesn't exist in the office, right? So you got to think about new ways of communication that is going to be both about transparency and about frequency. It has to be frequent enough that people don't have time for this build-up of, in the last time that I heard from my boss or the head of my organization, has something happened or not, right? And so one of the things that we've done in that regard is we actually started doing a 6 p.m. call every day. And sometimes the call is like, there's nothing major happened today. But at least you know that nothing happened, right? You don't have to worry about, did something happen that I don't know about, because the boss will say nothing happened. Right? And so that's at least a way. And the doubles range from like 3 minutes to sometimes 15, 20 minutes if some major calls or major events happen. But at least you know at the end of every day, it's a great point. Okay? And instead of the second function, which is related to a second problem about working from home issue and an issue with mental wellness, and I face this a lot my first month, and I know a lot of people are still facing it, which is when you work from home or outside the office, you no longer have spatial and temporal boundaries as much, right? Things blend into other. And what I mean is the space that you work and you live is the same. Last time, I live at home, I work at work, right? So I there's a spatial boundary. Then the time also got boundary, right? If I leave work at 6 or 7 p.m., then I come home and that time is safe and the space is safe for me. Now, because you have people are always at home, there is a sense sometimes that people are always reachable. And we've seen a creep from this, right? We look at like Microsoft Survey or Microsoft Teams and Office, there are significantly more messages that are being exchanged outside of office hours. And so, how do you then combat this issue of spatial and temporal boundaries? Right, so I for example, I moved. I'm in my future kids' room, right here, because like at least it's a space that, and when I leave this space, I don't bring my laptop. Like I don't bring my laptop to the living room. I work in this space, and that's it. And when I'm outside, I'm hanging out outside with my wife, and we're chilling, right? So that I'm creating a spatial boundary for myself. Not everybody has that luxury, but you need to be able to figure out a way to designate a space. I think it's very important. Some people don't have that. The luxury actually have creative solutions. Another one of my public service friends, what she does is she's like, yeah, I don't have office space, but what I do is every day after work finishes, I take my laptop, I close the screen, I put it back. Every morning, I take out from the back, then I open my laptop. Right? Then you feel like, you know, at least you feel that difference, and you feel that cathartic feeling of like, okay, the work day is over, I close my laptop. Right? And I think that's a beautiful routine to create your own space. And in what the 6 p.m. call does, it creates a temporal boundary, a time to say, hey, 6 p.m., I know some people will work probably after that, but it's a clear signal that, hey, 6 p.m., end of the day. And for me, I do take that as my end of day. So after 6 p.m., after the call, I'll go down for a walk. I have a walk with my wife. We go around for about half an hour, and then we come back in the evening. Right. In the rare events that I need to work, then I produce some work, but it's not often at all. But otherwise, it's a very clear temporal boundary, and it's great because there's some permanence and there's some sort of timing that other people around me can also rely on me for. And the final thing around temporal boundaries is one of the great things about using some of the tools like Slack, for example. We use Slack. A lot of GovTech teams use Slack, especially with development teams, is you can choose the notifications. So. Yeah. After 6 p.m., no more notifications. You message me. If I happen to check, then okay. But if I'm not checking Slack, then too bad. You won't notify me. And if you really need me, you'll call me. You can call me on Slack. But people generally don't unless it's like super urgent, right? So that's actually quite nice to have a separate app. Because if it's WhatsApp, for example, then it can become quite blurry. Because you send it, then naturally you will end up looking at WhatsApp. But with a separate app, actually, it's quite nice because you create that boundary. And I know there's a lot of things I can say, but the last thing I'll say about working from home that I think is interesting, that different about what we do, in terms of the communication space is one of the things that I miss, and we onboarded people, as you must have, during the pandemic. It's so weird, right? Because last time I will always welcome them. A week later, I'll check in, I'll go over to the desk, how are you doing, blah, blah, blah. You know, have you met this person? Let me introduce you. But now there are so many people who haven't met like 80% of the office.
Right.
So how do you encourage some of these casual conversations, informal conversations, whether it's among people who know each other but don't interact that frequently, but also for people who are newer to the organization and facilitate that, right? And so in Slack, we use an app called Dona, but I mean, the function is not hard. Basically, the idea is to randomize people and create a random pairing of people. And so we had this before. We had this before COVID, and what we did, it was once a month, you meet people and meet two people, and then you meet this one person. So in COVID, we said actually once a month is too infrequent. What we should do is we want to increase the frequency, we want to increase the variance of the people that you meet, but we also don't want it to have an additional cost to people in terms of time. So what we did is, so first we increased it from two people to three people. That's a bit less awkwardness, right? One person being shy.
Two
people. So that's the first thing we did. Second thing we did is we increased it from once a month to once every 2 weeks. Right, so you double the frequency, but in order for the principle of let's not take up all your time, we half the time. So the minimum duration is half an hour. So actually it takes the same amount of time. And what we did to make it even easier for people, we just schedule a slot on the team calendar on everybody's calendar. Here's a default slot. Every second Friday at 12 noon is a default donut slot. Everybody's cool, you just take the slot. You don't have to bother about scheduling. Just make it as seamless as possible for people to make this a reality. And we're seeing over 80% of groupings that are meeting up quite regularly. So that's really quite nice to see. And it creates, you're able to have the kind of in the organic spread of culture and a feel for what different people are working on and are doing. And you can do whatever you want and do not like. You can talk about whatever you want.
Yeah.
You can talk about hobbies, you can talk about eating, you can talk about, well, I mean, whatever, right? So the idea is to recreate this informal sense, because we used to all have lunch around this big work table and we can't recreate that. So donut is really helpful for doing that in an intentional way and also creating enough space to have those kinds of communications and connections that happen.
Yeah. I think that's the most important thing that most of us, you know, tend to forget, and that is, you know, one of the most important ingredients for mental wellness really is social interaction. You know, if you solve that problem, you solve like 80% of the problem. And yeah, so that's a good idea. And, you know, at least those who listen maybe can get some inspiration from that. I have two questions as a result from what you were speaking about. The first one is, you know, once your daughter comes along, where's the boundary going to be in terms of your workspace?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I don't know, I have two sort of half-baked ideas. So the first is, actually I'm thinking of still using this room because my kid will sleep in my room, right, for the first few months.
Right.
So I think that is still a possibility, but I actually do like the idea of the office for that and creating that spatial boundary, and I'm quite sure I will want to go into the office some days a week. There's been some construction. My neighbor's place is damn noisy for a couple of months before this. And what I used to do is, on days where I had longer calls, I actually used to go into the WeWork that's near my house, the UE Square one, because at least it's a nice space, that spatial demarcation and boundary, and I know that I won't disturb it. It's a great place for productivity. So I do see myself using the WeWork functionality to create that spatial boundary for myself. And if not, then putting the desk in a space that is dedicated and not getting rid of the desk.
Nice. And the second question, I suppose, and maybe, you know, as engineers or computer scientists, maybe you guys don't really have that problem. But, you know, I'm sure when circuit breaker happened and when most people started to work from home, to some level, productivity was affected, you know, I guess you can correct me if I'm wrong, if that's not the case at OpenGov, but, you know, when it comes to productivity being affected because people were adjusting, I mean, was the process like, you know, hey, it's okay, you know, let's take the time to figure it out? Or was there more like, okay, this is how we can try to solve it?
I think for productivity, you can't take such a hard line approach to it, and you can't be so focused on it, because ultimately, if you think about it, productivity, I don't think productivity should be an end goal in of itself, but productivity rather ought to be a product of the relationship between employee and employer. I think if you have a good relationship and ultimately the employee feels, hey, my employer really cares about me, first and foremost, then productivity will naturally follow, right? Because the employee then will say, I want to contribute, I want to do my best, both for myself and for my employer. We are aligned, let's make this happen, right? But if at any point the employee feels like, actually it's a transactional relationship, you only want me for my productivity and like for the particular skills that I bring or for the particular work that I'm producing, then that creates, it doesn't create much flexibility. It doesn't leave the kind of room that you're describing that is necessary for long-term productivity. And I think organizations can make the mistake of focusing on short-term productivity too much. And it actually ends up costing them in the long term, because your relationship with your employees suffer, and then as a consequence, your employees are either not happy or they leave, and both of these are not good outcomes, because then you don't end up having other people join. Like a lot of people who join OGP join from referrals. And honestly, a lot of our referrals are from rejected candidates. We reject 95% of candidates, right? We only have 5% acceptance rate. But the rejected candidates had such a good experience in their interview process and seeing, you know, how people work here and what the philosophy is like, that even though they didn't get in, they refer on their friends to say, hey, this is a really good place to work, you should come work here. You know, and you want that. And so in order for you to do that, it needs to be much more thinking about a long-term relationship. Now then the question is, if you believe that, how do you go about doing this, right? Because of course you've got to deliver. Everybody's got to deliver, right? I'm not saying give somebody a free pass, right? I'm not saying that. So then how do you encourage the long-term productivity that also translates to short-term clarity, right? But I think here you need the alignment of three things if you want that productivity to shine. Right? The first is there has to be clear alignment. First of all, you've got to know what are the key priorities, right? Here the deprioritization is quite important, but also you've got to know what you're working towards. Right? What are the long-term goals of the organization? Where do you fit in? What's your particular role as an individual in your team and in your organization? So that it's quite clear alignment on what's the direction that your team is going in, your organization is going in, that is clear. Right? Then there needs to be sufficient autonomy. If you want long-term productivity, give people autonomy because they will have the space, and they often come back with much more than you would have asked, because they have the time and space to think about it and in great depth, or even bring that breath and think about different things that they may not thought, right? So people have sufficient autonomy, and of course this requires you hire particularly people with enough drive in them, and that's one of our hiring criteria. So if you do that, then you can be sure that that's going to be a good outcome, right? Because you're actually hiring for the staff people, and you have to make sure that you have the initiative. The third thing is you want to make accountability a part of this, right? Because productivity needs to measure, right? So there needs to be some accountability. You want to make the accountability as easy as possible. Give you a specific example. What we do is for accountability, we have everybody maintains a working document. Basically, it's just a Word doc, a Google doc, and everybody in the organization has access to it. You want to see mine, you can type all working document, you will see my working document, right? And what it is, every Friday, all we ask people, just take 5 minutes, write down 3 to 5 bullet points of what did you do that week. That's it, very easy, right? I mean, and then what happens is, when you do have to do your summary every 6 months for your 6-monthly performance appraisal, it's much easier for you to do it because you've already documented everything that you've done over the last 6 months. So your accountability is really easy to done. And in a way, that inspires you, because for me, I'm like, what am I going to put down this Friday, right? Then that spurs me to produce, like make sure that I produce what I committed to doing at the beginning. And one of the modifications that we made, because you would naturally also hear about these things on Fridays, right? As people are going around and talking, it's a natural thing. And so what I wanted is, how do I create some of that dialogue and replicate that for the environment where we're all working virtually. And so I wrote, I'm not an engineer, right? I'm a head of product culture. But being a tech organization, got to learn, got to upskill myself. So I learned a bit of JavaScript and I wrote a Slack bot. I call it update bot because I'm not very creative. And the idea is every Friday, the bot will ping everybody and say, hey, what the hell did you work on today? So instead of me, because instead of me having to go on everybody's, very mafan, right? Go on everybody's working document and see, and I probably won't, but I want to get a sense of what people have worked on in a quick way. So the bot will basically ping people and say, hey, what did you work on? Tell me what you worked on. And then you have a very short summary, right? One or two lines of like, hey, I worked on this stuff. And then at the end of Friday, the bot will list back to the whole team in the team channel, hey, this is what each of these people worked on. And then you can start some conversations, right? Because each line, I'm like, hey, this person worked on this. Sounds interesting. Can you tell me a bit more about this? Or like, hey, what happened with this meeting that you had with this external stakeholder? Can you tell me a bit more? And then you have the opportunity for side conversations to happen off the back of this thing. So that's another example of modification that happened for COVID. But really, it's a way to have accountability. And productivity, again, is one piece of the puzzle. But you also want to make sure that collaboration, I think, is something that I would worry about more than the pure productivity. Because ultimately, for productivity, if you have these two components, I think you can do it.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting and insightful. It's definitely one of the tricky ones, but you guys seem to have nailed it, so to speak. My final question, because I'm mindful of your time as well, is what is the biggest lesson OGP or OpenGov has learned from this experience, you know, building products for building minimum, or should I say, what's the biggest lesson you guys have learned from this experience? And I suppose, by extension, the greater mission of your organization when it comes to building meaningful products for the public good.
So one of the biggest things I've learned is that, you know, we need to walk the talk, right? So and what I mean by that is, when we build products, we talk about this stuff, right? Build for the user, iterate quickly. And when we think about internal policies, processes, we also need to do that. You know, we can't say this is how we build products, but how we operate is different. How we operate is, we've got to follow all the rules. The rules say this must do like that only, and this is the only way, right? You need to also be flexible. You need to also iterate. You need to also throw away 90% of the code, right? To give you an example of what we did internally in the process, one of the things we wanted is creating online presence, right? You see people, how do you see people online? And we ended up trying quite a few solutions, including a solution called Remotion, which has online presence where you can say, hey, am I available or not? And then you can quickly video call somebody. And we ended up throwing away a bunch of that and going with a solution called Discord, which is actually a gaming platform. Yeah. You might be familiar with it, but it's a video first platform, and that's the key. And so if you create channels there that are product channels, and you know when the meetings are happening, even if you don't know where the meetings are happening, you can see on Discord who is in what room, and you can see a live sign there, so you know somebody is presenting something. So what we are encouraged to do is, and what I encourage people to do is, hey, if you're interested in what's happening, even if it's not your product, just go in the room. It's just like eavesdropping in the office one, right? You might be overhearing somebody talking, right? Just go and sit in the room. And then you hear about what's happening and what's going on. So, but it took quite a few trials, right? And it's the same with video conferencing software. Some things we decided to use Zoom, some things we use Google Meetup, some things we tried using some others. We tried Jitsi and a few others, which also we abandoned because not stable enough. But I mean, the whole idea is to keep iterating. You try and you see what works, and then you apply that not just to your products, but also internally. To doing that, I think another great example is you've got to be open to working differently, right? So the 6 p.m. chat is completely different. We never had any kind of like 6 p.m. before you go check, you don't have that. But it makes sense for this kind of environment. And similarly with our work with volunteers, we never really worked, and certainly not with so many people in such a big way. But if you iterate quite quickly, if you maintain the focus on the user, and in this case, both the actual volunteers, we want to engage in a meaningful way, but also the GovTech teams, which are focused on getting products out the door and building them quite quickly. If you focus on that, actually, you can come up with new and innovative ways that make sense and that are helpful, that can be scalable and applied to other use cases. So It's really about how do you apply building product, not just to tech products, but also in a broader sense to the organization. And what does that really mean when you take these values and apply them wholeheartedly to the organization? You really can deliver things in a matter of days and weeks, as we have with our products, if you do things well.
Wow. Well, it's been really insightful learning so much. And I must say, like in general, I'm really surprised and delighted in many ways, knowing that, you know, we have an organization that not only ships products fast, but really practices that sort of agility and I don't know, compassion when it comes to creating a team that works towards, you know, something good. So thanks for taking the time to really share your insights. Yeah. Having said that, are you able to disclose if there's any other products coming out or launching soon, or anything we should be looking out for?
Well, one thing I do want to say actually is yes, while we may be the face of some of these products, we would not be able to produce these products were it not for great collaboration and partnership with many, many other government agencies. You know, like the postman example that comes out, as she once said, MCI was really great. MCI is the one that comes out with content and the one that's managing that setting up on a day-to-day basis, right? Similarly, with OMA and location tracking, it is MOM and ICA who are monitoring the dashboards and doing the day-to-day enforcement. So really, it is a testament to the kind of collaboration that exists and the willingness of not just OGP, but the wider public service as well, who really have a big focus on residents of Singapore to make sure that we are safe and well taken care of during this challenging period.
Yeah. Well, as a Singaporean, that's very comforting to hear. So thank you for the work you guys do as well. Much appreciated. Well, Raul, thanks so much for spending time out of your day to speak to us about, you know, OpenGov products and, you know, how you guys went through the whole COVID period as well. Much appreciated.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Thank you.